Streaming live. The leader in internet talk radio. VoiceAmerica.com. Good morning and welcome to The Love Doctor with your host, Dr. Terry Orbuck. Dr. Terry takes a fresh new approach to love and relationships, backed by research, not by pop culture. Now here's your host, Dr. Terry.
Welcome. This is Dr. Terry Orbuck, the Love Doctor, and you're listening to the Love Doctor Talk Radio Program, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Each week on the Love Doctor Program, we explore a different relationship topic, and today we'll be discussing how to talk to your kids about sex. My guest is Dr. Jill Grimes. She is a board-certified family practice physician, a leading expert in sexually transmitted diseases, and the author of the new book, Seductive Delusions, How Everyday People Catch STDs. Dr. Grimes is in daily contact with the country's most sexually active age group, college students, and argues that no one is immune from sexually transmitted diseases. Everyone must take precautions to protect themselves. It is a pleasure to have her with us this morning. Welcome, Dr. Grimes.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I am so looking forward to talking to you today. So it is such a pleasure to have you with us. Let's start, though, Dr. Grimes, by telling everyone just a little bit about your background and what was the inspiration for the book Seductive Delusions.
All right. Well, I am a practicing family physician, as you mentioned, and I work in a private practice in Austin, Texas. I also intermittently work at the University of Texas in their health center, seeing both students and faculty. And what made me write this book was not sexually transmitted diseases in and of themselves, but the fact that virtually every person that I diagnose with a sexually transmittable disease looks at me in shock, truly, truly not thinking this could have happened to them. They don't believe they did a risky behavior often if they had oral sex or anal sex but refrained from traditional sex. They thought they were choosing a safe behavior. Or the other thing that I just most commonly see is that there's the misperception that you have to sleep with a lot of people to catch an STD. And particularly young college students in a committed relationship, this may be the first person they've ever had sex with, and they're just flabbergasted that that could have led to a disease.
So what you're saying then is that there are a lot of myths out there which then translates into the fact that people are shocked when they actually do get a sexually transmitted disease?
Exactly.
And is that why then your book is filled with stories of people learning about getting an STD? I mean, are the stories then the way that you're showing people that these myths are wrong?
Exactly, because the other thing that I see is these same patients in just general conversation as I'm, you know, treating them for something else, will say, hey, did you see Grey's Anatomy last night? And they'll go into enormous detail, often even of a medical procedure, of something that they saw on television. Stories stick with people. Mm-hmm. And so I started realizing that if I could perhaps write these stories that any primary care physician could predict, you know, you get the first two sentences out of your mouth, oh, I was you know, broke up with my boyfriend, but we got back together last week, and we all know what's coming, but it's a surprise to them. So I thought if I could share it in story form, people would get, you know, hopefully emotionally involved with the characters. It would create a more lasting impression than a sterile textbook.
Right, and I agree with you. Stories are so interesting. We do get attached to the people that the stories are about. So then we're going to remember what that person went through. Now, what are some of the most common myths about STDs? And again, I want to tell everyone that STDs are sexually transmitted diseases. What are some of those myths that you'd like to clear up?
Well, the number one myth that I'd like to clear up is that you cannot get a disease from oral sex. The mm-hmm. fact is that not only can you, but that is probably the most common thing that I see in my office, in particular with herpes, that someone is a recipient of oral sex and they develop genital herpes from that.
I see. And so the myth is that you cannot get it from oral sex. The reality, the fact is you can, correct?
Absolutely.
Other myths that might be important to share with us today?
The next myth is sort of captured in the title of my book, that it's, you know, we like to think it's those people in the corner of society that get sexually transmittable diseases. We think it's the traditional high-risk populations. Oh, that's something that only happens with prostitutes or in the homosexual population or, you know, just or uneducated or poor. But the STDs don't decide who they're going to infect by checking your skin color, your age, or your pocketbook. They happen in everybody. And so that myth that if you choose the right person, you're safe, that's the next biggest myth.
Right. And so that's the seductive delusion.
Exactly. That is the seductive delusion, that if you choose the right person, not only are there no physical consequences, but no emotional consequences. And I believe you're the expert there.
Right, absolutely. And I have to say, though, that looking at your book, first of all, I love the title, which I told you before we even started the interview, and I love even saying it, Seductive Delusions. And I should tell listeners as well that the cover of the book is wonderful as well. It's got two high-heeled shoes on the cover and a tie, is that correct?
Or yes, I actually had voted for a football in the background myself. I wanted to emphasize that, you know, half of it is guys. It's not just girls getting or giving sexually transmittable diseases. Obviously, half the population is male. So I wanted to appeal to both, and I still recognize that there aren't going to be too many teenage boys that are going to pick up a book with high-heeled red shoes on the front cover. But at least with the tie there, we tried to indicate that it's for men as well.
Right. And I guess the other myth also, which you just described, would be that, you know, it's only women who get or give STDs. And so that's another reality that you talk about in the book. And it comes to both men and women, correct?
Exactly. And I would like to continue on that mm-hmm. the next great myth is that if you have a sexually transmittable disease, you'll definitely know. You would have some kind of symptoms. It'd be itching or burning or discharge, but something would let you know that you have a sexually transmittable disease. That is absolutely false. So many of these diseases are perfectly silent until there's damage.
And so how then do individuals find out if there are no symptoms or if it is silent?
That's where the screening comes in. And so when you see your physician for your annual exam, if you have, hopefully the physician or other medical provider will be asking you, have you had any new sexual partners since your last exam? And if the answer to that is yes, the next thing out of that provider's mouth should be, would you like to be tested for sexually transmittable diseases so that they can check your blood for the ones that we detect in the blood, such as syphilis and HIV and hepatitis, and that if you're a woman and they're doing a pap smear, along with that, they'll do an additional test that often can come from the same sample to test for gonorrhea and for chlamydia.
And so you're saying then that primary care physicians or your internist or whomever you're going for your medical care should be asking you questions as well.
Absolutely. I think that's our job. That's exactly what we need to be doing, and that's a big part of preventative medicine when we're looking particularly at young people, although, again, these diseases go through the whole age spectrum.
Absolutely. Now, what are the most commonly misdiagnosed STDs?
The one that's missed the most, I would say, is probably chlamydia because it's silent so often, particularly in men. But once you test for it, you can detect it. The one that's misdiagnosed, I would say the most, would be trichomonas, which is a parasitic infection. And frequently it comes and goes in terms of symptoms. Many women feel that they have a urinary tract infection. They'll get burning when they urinate, and they'll go to the doctor, and they'll check their urine, and they'll do a culture of their urine, and that is not going to detect the trichomonas. It will not grow in a standard bacterial culture. And so it gets missed. The other reason it gets missed is that when you look at urine under a microscope, it happens to be the exact same size and shape as a white blood cell. And so if you do it quickly, you'll actually see the trichomonas moving. But if the slide sits around on the counter for 5-10 minutes, you're not going to see that, and it's going to get missed.
Mm. Okay. And so as a person going to a physician, is there anything you can ask so that these commonly misdiagnosed STDs are diagnosed properly?
Well, I think the most important thing is to have a full dialogue about what you're being tested for. Many women believe that when they go in for their annual exam for a pap smear, that if they're told their pap is normal, that they've been tested for everything.
Yes.
So there needs to be an open line of communication from the patient and the provider so that the patient can say, well, exactly what STDs am I being checked for, so that they're clear on that.
Right. And now you also said that many people are surprised then when they are diagnosed with an STD. How do you console patients who are surprised or get upset when they learn they have an STD?
Well, some it's easier than others. And the reason for that is if you get trichomonas that we were just talking about, it's curable. Gonorrhea and chlamydia are curable. So it's much easier to console someone when you can say, okay, you have this. The great news is that we found it, and hopefully you found it when they've only had it a short time, and that you're treating it and curing it and preventing any further complications down the road. It's much more difficult when it's a viral infection, such as herpes or the wart virus, the human papillomavirus, or HPV for short, or HIV, because that is not something that we can eliminate yet.
Mm-hmm.
So for people who I'm diagnosing with those diseases, it's much more difficult to console them. I certainly try and educate them on all the treatments that we have and reassure them that they're not alone in this, and mm-hmm. get them into a support group, or at least link, you know, give them websites or something where they can realize the magnitude of how many people in our country are developing these sexually transmittable infections.
So you do get them into support groups or send them to therapists to work on the emotional aspects.
Absolutely.
As well. We actually, Dr. Jill, have to take a short break right now. You're listening to Dr. Terry Orbach, host of the Love Doctor program. My guest today is Dr. Jill Grimes, author of the new book, Seductive Delusions. When we can come back, I want to talk about how do we talk to our kids about sex and STDs. Stay tuned and get the facts. We will be right back.
Have you ever thought about having your own internet talk show? Well, if you said yes, then click About Us. Then click Be a Host to get more information. Or just call Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417.
Say that again.
480-294-6417. VoiceAmerica.com. What does it take to have fulfilling relationships with love partners, family members, and friends? According to Dr. Terry Orbach, better known as the Love Doctor, it takes practice, patience, and thoughtfulness. Dr. Terry knows, having listened to the questions and problems of thousands of people over the past 20 years, the Love Doctor's new, helpful, easy-to-follow 3-CD set is a must-have for anyone who wants to improve, strengthen, and enhance their romantic relationships. Check out her seminars, national speaking engagements, relationships, relationship books and private one-on-one relationship coaching sessions. Log on to DrTerryTheLoveDoctor.com. That's DrTerryTheLoveDoctor.com, TheLoveDoctor.com, and discover expert advice and practical tips that you can use and apply right away to make your relationships healthier and more fulfilling. Dr. Terry's smart, compassionate approach to relationships is a welcome prescription for all matters of the heart. That's Dr. Terry, TheLoveDoctor.com.
Keeping families together, whole and healthy, is sometimes a serious challenge to parents. And when there is a crisis, where do you turn for help? Right here, the Parents Hour with Dr. Arlene Kerman, an open and frank forum covering both legal and social issues surrounding our kids. Tune in for the Parents Hour with Dr. Arlene Kerman every Friday at 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern on the Voice America Radio Network.
If you want to put the pep back in your step, Chad Lafferty says just what you're looking for. Dance is life. Life is dance.
It's only about dance.
It's about moving through life with style, gaining awareness of the never-ending, ever-flowing movement that accompanies all of life's activities. Dance is life. Life is dance. Broadcast every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Radio Network. Be sure to tune in and tap into the limitless healing that dance can provide.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Thank you for starting your morning out with the Love Doctor, Dr. Terry. If you have a question or need advice from the Love Doctor, you can email Dr. Terry at questions at DrTerryTheLoveDoctor.com, and you'll get your questions answered live on the air. That address again is questions at DrTerryTheLoveDoctor.com. Now, back to Dr. Terry.
We're back. This is Dr. Terry Orbach, host of the Love Doctor program on the Voice America Network. I want to remind everyone about an upcoming special Love Doctor program with Lauren Bloom, the apology guru. That show is next week, Monday, December 8th, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, and the program will be focused on how to move on after a betrayal. If you've ever been betrayed by someone you love, you do not want to miss this very special Love Doctor program. Now, for those of you who just joined us today, my guest is Dr. Jill Grimes, author of the new book, Seductive Delusions. To learn more about Dr. Jill Grimes or her book, please visit her website at jillgrimesmd.com. Jill, G-R-I-M-E-S-M-D.com. Now, Dr. Jill, when we took a short break, I told everyone that we'd be coming back to really talk to the listeners that are parents. One of the statistics you report is that one out of four sexually active teens will get a sexually transmitted disease. Now, is this what you are seeing in your practice?
Actually, the true statistic is that one out of four American teens, not just the sexually active ones, one out of four all American teens has an STD.
Wow, and that's 25%. Yeah. So the bottom line really is that our children, regardless if they're sexually active or not, are at risk for getting an STD?
Regardless of whether or not we know that they're sexually active.
Okay.
I just wanted to make that distinction because many of us want to take our kids out of that risk pool. I'm a parent, and my girls are still fairly young, and the last thing I want to think about at this point is them considering being sexually active. But they still think boys are completely gross. So,
right. So
point,
you're
I'm
still safe, probably.
Yes.
Now I have children as well, and we know studies show that children are becoming sexually active younger and younger. So how do we as parents talk to our children about sex and about STDs?
Well, it obviously depends on the kid. And with girls, there's a bit of a natural lead-in when your daughter is of the age where her body begins changing and she's going to start her periods. And most girls are not fully ready to talk all the way about sex and sexually transmittable diseases at that point, but at least you've initiated the dialogue. With boys, of course, they're having similar changes in their bodies, but sometimes it's not quite as obvious as a period starting in a boy when he's a maturing adolescent. So just in general, having that an open relationship with your child to be able to talk with them about their bodies, I think using appropriate language about body parts makes it, you don't want to make it so taboo that you can't talk about different parts of your body. Mm-hmm. And when we explain stranger danger or just changes in your body through adolescence, you want to use all the proper medical terminology.
And so using the appropriate language is important, as well as having an open relationship with your child. Now, I should mention, I also do some work with parents and children regarding sexuality, and we know from that research that moms also tend to be the main person to have this talk with their sons as well as daughters. So for the moms that are listening, do you agree that it's okay to talk to sons as well?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think there's some advantages to having the same sex, having the discussion, because you can relate to it a little bit more. And a young boy often is more embarrassed if he's beginning to have something such as wet dreams, where that's when boys volunteer to do their own laundry for the first time. But sometimes they're more embarrassed talking with their mom about that than their father. But it really just depends on your relationship.
Right. And you also say that a key to a great talk with your tween or teen is to make it short, to make it direct, probably get your cues from the child, him or herself, as well.
Yes. And sometimes it's easier for parents to start off with a book about your changing body. If they're older, a book actually about sexually transmittable diseases would be another way to approach it. I think that it's really important to let your son or daughter know that they've got your undivided attention. I think you want to actually set aside some time and say, hey, I'd like to talk with you about a topic that's kind of uncomfortable, but let's sit down and, show them that you're serious. Put down your cell phone. Don't, really, it doesn't need to be a large amount of time, 10, 15 minutes. But turn off the TV, turn off the radio, put away your cell phones, and get their undivided attention so that they recognize that you think that this is important.
Mm-hmm. And it is important. And sometimes we may even need to make an appointment with our child. What we don't want to probably do is ask them in the car or on the way home from
soccer practice. Exactly.
Right. Right. So that you're suggesting we really find a good time. That timing probably has a lot to do with what then gets heard from the child's standpoint as well.
I think that's a very good point. And then the next thing I'd really like to point out is that many people feel that if their personal religious values only promote abstinence, that there's no need to talk about sexually transmittable diseases. I have a very different slant on that myself. When we teach our kids not to smoke, we don't just tell them, don't smoke. We tell them age-appropriate information. We say, ooh, it's going to make your teeth yellow and your breath smell bad. And then, they get older and can understand more, we add in and we say, oh, my gosh, and you can get cancers from smoking. You can get mouth cancers and lung cancers and then chronic emphysema. And then we talk about quality of life. And we educate them so that they can make a decision recognizing all the dangers of smoking. Yet with sex, frequently we just say, don't have sex, or don't have sex till you're married. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to give kids a little more credit than that. I think we need to really teach them about what is the problem with getting a sexually transmittable disease? If it's a young woman and she gets chlamydia or gonorrhea and doesn't know it because there's no symptoms, she can actually scar her reproductive organs, the tubes primarily, to where she could become infertile. And that's important information for kids to have.
So the future implications for the health of our kids, we really need to talk to them about those implications, about those future possibilities. So tell us, what do we say to a child, 15, 16, 17, about STDs? Do we go and give them a list and give them the information about each of the STDs, or what do we actually practically say?
You know, again, I keep saying it depends on the individual child, but you have to see where they're at. And usually by 15, 16, 17, they are going to be having sexual feelings. They're going to think that, you know, that kissing might be interesting. And so I think one thing it's important to get across to your kids is the generic concept that there's some viral diseases that cannot be cured, and then there are other diseases that can be cured. And they need to understand that that you can get these diseases through means besides traditional intercourse. And hopefully parents can be comfortable saying, you know, that you can get these diseases from oral sex. If they are not comfortable talking about the specifics of how you can get these diseases, then that's a conversation that I would encourage the parent to have the child's physician have with them. And, you know, maybe help them just write a list of questions to ask their doctor so that you're sure that the information is being communicated. But you don't want to overwhelm them with too much at one time. That's why I say keep it 10 or 15 minutes. But I think in just making sure that they understand that there are some diseases that we can't erase. You can't go back and make a second choice. Nobody starts off thinking, oh, I'm going to catch an STD today, you know, and to talk about that. I think also talking with them a bit about some role-playing, if you're comfortable doing that, not about intimate role-playing as, you know, in the throes of the moment with their significant other exactly, but more talking about, you know, how are you going to handle it with your boyfriend or girlfriend if they're pushing you to do more than you're comfortable to do? What you know, and talking about just giving them some phrases to say that, you know, I'm just not comfortable with that, and let's stop, and talking about respecting limits and open communication.
Those are very helpful suggestions, not only for practical tips to actually talk to your children or child about, but if you're not comfortable, then working with the child's physician is an excellent option for parents, as you suggested, who don't feel comfortable saying words, saying oral sex, saying the diseases, or their religious or ethical issues within themselves. If they don't feel comfortable, there are people out there who can help give the information to their child. Now, I should also tell listeners, Dr. Jill, that your book is wonderful because it does give many facts, much information as well about STDs, so that if parents don't have the information themselves, your book might be a very practical guide to look at.
I will tell you that when I was writing early drafts of the book and having my friends, I'm 43, so my friends are in their 40s, and we have kids in their, you know, tweens and teens and you know, all ages. But when I was having my friends just read it, they're like, oh, my gosh, I need to read this book so I can talk to my kid. And they would call me up and say, you're kidding. Can this really be transmitted that way?
Right.
Because our next generation, you know, second base for us involved touching a woman's, you know, breast.
Right.
And second base now is often oral sex. So I think it's, you know, we have to give ourselves the information first and then give it to our kids or let their physician handle it. And I get asked this every day, and I can't imagine any pediatrician, OB-GYN, or family physician who isn't going to be comfortable having that discussion.
Absolutely. And even with my daughter, I'm there with her. She's 14 for the first 15 or 20 minutes. And then her physician says, okay, now you can leave, Mom.
Perfect.
And she talks with my daughter by herself. So, but a wonderful guide, Seductive Delusions, for information for adults as well. I agree. We have to take another short break right now. You're listening to Dr. Terry Orbach, host of the Love Doctor program. We'll continue our discussion when we return. Stay tuned and get the facts. We will be right back.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
What does it take to have fulfilling relationships with love partners, family members, and friends? According to Dr. Terry Orbach, better known as the Love Doctor, it takes practice, patience, and thoughtfulness. Dr. Terry knows, having listened to the questions and problems of thousands of people over the past 20 years, the Love Doctor's new, helpful, easy-to-follow 3-CD set is a must-have for anyone who wants to improve, strengthen, and enhance their romantic relationships. Check out her seminars, national speaking engagements, relationship books, and private one-on-one relationship coaching sessions. Log on to DrTerryTheLoveDoctor.com. That's DrTerryTheLoveDoctor.com, TheLoveDoctor.com, and discover expert advice and practical tips that you can use and apply right away to make your relationships healthier and more fulfilling. Dr. Terry's smart, compassionate approach to relationships is a welcome prescription for all matters of the heart. That's DrTerryTheLoveDoctor.com.
In the spirit of Have Couch, Will Travel, Dr. Carol Lieberman creates a haven of sanity in an increasingly insane world. Each day we are bombarded with news of events that have never crossed our wildest nightmares. Society is spiraling out of control and everyone is reeling from it. But now there's an answer. The best way to keep sane in this insane world is to tune in to Dr. Carol's Couch on Voice America. Dr. Carol, a certified media psychiatrist, will broadcast live from her Beverly Hills office every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Call or log in and get help with whatever is sending you reeling whenever you need a soothing voice to calm and advise you. That's Dr. Carol's Couch every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time here on America's Voice, voiceamerica.com.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
Thank you for starting your morning out with the Love Doctor, Dr. Terry. If you have a question or need advice from the Love Doctor, you can email Dr. Terry at questions@drterrytheLoveDoctor.com, and you'll get your questions answered live on the air. That address again is questions@drterrytheLoveDoctor.com. Now, back to Dr. Terry.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Terry Orbach, host of the Love Doctor program on the Voice America Network. I want to remind listeners that I do want to hear from you. So if you have questions or comments about today's topic or need relationship advice in general, please email me. And my email address is questions@drterrytheLoveDoctor.com. That email address again is questions@drterrytheLoveDoctor.com, and I do answer your questions. Today, we've been talking to Dr. Jill Grimes, author of the new book, Seductive Delusions, and you can learn more information about Dr. Grimes or her book at her website, jillgrimesmd.com. And by the way, Dr. Jill, I want to say that you have a wonderful STD quiz on your website I actually took and thought it was an excellent quiz.
I'm sure you got 100%.
Oh, I hope so. I think I got one wrong, though, but I can't remember what that was. But I felt it was a nice way for people to get on your website and learn more information about STDs. Now, one of the things I did want to ask you, before we get to some other issues is about sex ed classes. And because we were talking about parents and children and how we talk to our children about sex and STDs, do you think that our school health and sex ed classes are getting the information out, getting the important information out to our kids well enough?
Well, I think that they're giving good, accurate information. But unfortunately, because it's a textbook, it's a dry list of statistics, no one thinks it applies to them. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very excited that there's actually a school district considering adopting my book, because it's stories and it's looking in the mirror and seeing a high school quarterback getting genital warts, and to really put a face on these diseases that students can recognize.
I think it's, and also sort of, you know, say to themselves, if the quarterback is getting genital warts, then I might be as well.
Exactly. I tried to pick sort of the beautiful people and, you know, make them, because honestly, that's what I see anyway, but that if the cheerleader or the quarterback or, you know, the doctor or the lawyer or, you know, whoever you want to set forth as an example of something other people might look up to, they get these diseases as well. But the most important thing is to teach people that looking in the mirror, it's your peers who get these, regardless of who you are, because everybody gets them.
So most sex ed classes you're suggesting then are using the dry textbooks that list the STDs and perhaps the symptoms and the implications on our health. But if they would adopt seductive delusions, kids might listen and they might read the stories and hear what you're telling them. Is that correct?
And remember them.
And remember
is the most important thing, because they can read it and hear it and know it, but if they're not applying that when they're in an at-risk situation, then we haven't done the right thing. So I think we have to get the information out there, but whether it's the teacher creating role-playing within the classroom of, you know, who do you think would get this, or, you know, trying to stimulate some more discussion to where it's clear to the kids that people in their school, you know, that are their friends, their peers are getting these. Until we incorporate that element, I don't think we're going to be as successful. And certainly the numbers, the statistics that we have of how many American youth have sexually transmittable diseases, we need to change. We need to do something more.
Yes, and so I hope that school district does adopt your book and others as well. I found it extremely beneficial and very informative for both kids and parents. Now, there's been quite a bit of media attention these days surrounding Gardasil, the vaccine for the prevention of cervical cancer. What's your opinion on the HPV vaccine?
Well, I am very positive about this vaccine. I think we have a chance to do something for our daughters and hopefully eventually our sons as well, because this virus is known to cause throat cancers and other head and neck cancers as well as the cervical cancer. But we have a chance to prevent cancers in our kids. And not to mention the Gardasil vaccine as opposed to the other HPV vaccine, which only protects against the strains that cause cancer. The Gardasil vaccine also protects against the two strains that cause 90% of genital warts. And while genital warts are not life-threatening, they don't turn into cancer, they are very painful to treat. They are beyond a nuisance. And I think if you ask any person who has had genital warts and had to worry about carrying that and passing it on to all their future partners for the rest of their lives, whether or not, if you ask them, would you go through a series of three shots to have prevented this, they'd say yes in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. It is an expensive vaccine, but, you know, it's expensive to have the research and development to create these vaccines. The two-year safety data just came out on Gardasil a few weeks ago, and I do not have concerns about the safety of the vaccine. When they look at the safety, there's four different reporting systems that they look at, and there was a great deal of media hype around a month ago or so about, can Gardasil cause shock or Guillain-Barré syndrome or death? And the bottom line is that no, it's a safe vaccine. Like all vaccines, it's going to cause some local irritation, some redness or discomfort. But frankly, I have to say, I don't see as much from that as I do from the flu vaccine, which I also recommend.
Which you also recommend. So it's a safe vaccine. And should we be giving it to our daughters before they're sexually active?
Yes, because the whole idea is that the HPV, the human papillomavirus, that's the virus that causes both warts and cervical cancer, different strains of it, it is spread by skin-to-skin contact. So you note that I didn't say it's spread by sex.
Yes.
It's spread just from skin-to-skin contact like any other wart virus. And so do we need to give it to 9-year-old girls? It's recommended from 9 and up.
Right.
Have I given it to my daughters who are 9 and 11? Not yet, but I'll be giving it to my 11-year-old this year. We want to give it well before they've thought about being sexually active, but I don't know that we need to rush to give it, you know, 3 or 4 years before they've ever thought about it.
Right. So that's very helpful information. It's a safe vaccine and that it's spread by skin-to-skin contact. I did not know that. That's interesting.
Yes. It's a little
Thank
scary.
You for that information. I had to ask you because there's such a lot of media attention surrounding Gardasil these days.
Right.
Now, back to writing your book, and we only have a few minutes left, Dr. Jill, but what kind of experience has writing your book been for you, both as a physician and as a mother?
Well, as a mother, it's been very interesting. I mean, we joke about how many years of psychotherapy it will take our daughters to get over their mom writing an STD book when they're in middle school. But, you know, the truth is my daughters are really proud of me, and they understand my book at their level. My 9-year-old knows that I've written a book, and then it got published, and that it is about diseases of your bottom, and that's part of my job as a doctor, something I help people with. My 11-year-old, turning 12 in a couple months, knows really what the book's about, just really only found that out fairly recently, and just thinks it's terrific that I'm going to be able to help people make, you know, better educated choices. And it's certainly facilitating my discussions with my daughters because I've got all the facts at my fingertips, not that I didn't before, but, you know, I've been very focused on it for the past year.
Right.
And so I think it's helped that. And I'm a Girl Scout leader. And, you know, so I really enjoy, one of my passions in life is youth, and particularly adolescence. I love tweens and teens. That's my favorite age. And so I'm excited to have developed something to help all ages, but especially at that critical age. And I want to make a difference and prevent disease.
Right, absolutely. That is wonderful. I love adolescents, too. And I'm so glad that your daughters are proud of you and that they understand the book in different ways, but different important ways. And now, as a physician, how has writing the book changed your life or affected you as a physician?
You know, ironically, I don't think it's changed my life as a physician a whole lot. I've always been kind of passionate about preventative medicine and adolescence, and obviously the big things there are going to be nutrition and sex. And so that's sort of been something I've done all along, which made the book fairly easy to write, quite honestly, because the discussions that the physicians have with the patients in the book, those are the discussions that I have every day.
Right.
So directly, I'm not sure how much it impacted me. My patients are actually excited about the book, parents and college students alike. And so that it's fun for me in that nature. But directly in terms of my everyday practice as a physician, I think there hasn't been a whole lot of change there.
Well, but at least I'm glad that your patients are proud of you and excited about the publication of the book. Thank you so much, Dr. Grimes, for joining us today. I learned a lot, and I know that listeners have as well. So thank you very much.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
It's been a pleasure. Dr. Jill Grimes, author of the book, Seductive Delusions, How Everyday People Catch STDs, And again, for more information about Dr. Grimes or her book, visit her website at jillgrimesmd.com. When we return, I will answer your email questions on air. So stay tuned and get the facts. We will be right back.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
What does it take to have fulfilling relationships with love partners, family members, and friends? According to Dr. Terry Orbuck, better known as the Love Doctor, it takes practice, patience, and thoughtfulness. Dr. Terry knows, having listened to the questions and problems of thousands of people over the past 20 years, the Love Doctor's new, helpful, easy-to-follow 3-CD set is a must-have for anyone who wants to improve, strengthen, and enhance their romantic relationships. Check out her seminars, national speaking engagements, relationship books, and private one-on-one relationship coaching sessions. Log on to DrTerryTheLoveDoctor.com. That's DrTerryTheLoveDoctor.com, TheLoveDoctor.com, and discover expert advice and practical tips that you can use and apply right away to make your relationships healthier and more fulfilling. Dr. Terry's smart, compassionate approach to relationships is a welcome prescription for all matters of the heart. That's DrTerryTheLoveDoctor.com.
Free yourself from the prison of your conditioned thoughts and destroy barriers that hinder your success. Tune in to Empowered Living, Life, Truth, and Being Free with host, speaker, writer, and personal coach Steve Maraboli. Steve and his expert guests take you on a quest for truth and highlight philosophies and strategies that help you release your greatest self. It's time to shake off mediocrity, destroy personal barriers, live up to your greatest potential, and align with happiness, success, and excellence with Empowered Living, Life, the Truth, and Being Free with Steve Maraboli. Broadcasting every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America channel. Empowered Living, Life, the Truth, and Being Free. Release the power within.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Thank you for starting your morning out with the Love Doctor, Dr. Terry. If you have a question or need advice from the Love Doctor, you can email Dr. Terry at questions@drterrytheLoveDoctor.com, and you'll get your questions answered live on the air. That address again is questions@drterrytheLoveDoctor.com. Now, back to Dr. Terry.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Terry Orbach, and you're listening to the Love Doctor Talk Radio program, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Each week, I devote the last segment to answering your questions. So remember, if you have questions about today's topic or any relationship issue, please email me, and my email address is questions@drterrytheLoveDoctor.com. Now today, before I answer a listener's question, I want to remind you again about an upcoming special Love Doctor program. If you have ever been betrayed by someone you love, you don't want to miss this very special Love Doctor program on Monday, December 8th, next week, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, How to Move On After a Betrayal. Myself, Dr. Terry Orbach, the Love Doctor, and Lauren Bloom, author of The Art of the Apology, will be discussing how to move on after a betrayal so you can heal your pain and live a happier life. We'll cover the best way to get past your hurt, what to say to your friends and family about the betrayal, how to let go of the past, steps to rebuilding trust in your relationship, and much, much more. You don't want to miss this show again next week, Monday, December 8th. The first question then I will be answering today is from Ethan, and he lives in Michigan. Dear Dr. Terry, the holidays are almost here. I usually love the holidays, but this year I'm getting really stressed because of the time I have to spend with my family. How can I survive this long and difficult time period? And what can I do to make the holiday less stressful for myself and my family? Well, Ethan, thank you so much for your question. While family ties can be very close over the holidays, so can family tensions. So if your family get-together feels more like an obligation than a celebration, don't worry. You are so not alone. Studies show that most people have elevated levels of stress during family get-togethers over the holidays. And there are a few reasons for this. First, Ethan, holiday gatherings and holiday guest lists are often based on obligation rather than choice. And this creates a lot of anxiety and a lot of stress. Second, stress is inevitable because families bring their historic baggage. It's a fact of life. So everybody has baggage. Everybody has issues in the past surrounding their family, which they bring to the get-together or meal. Third, when we're in the company of our partner's family, if that may be the case, we often want to gain their approval, and that can be stress-producing as well. And finally, differences between family backgrounds become much more apparent over the holidays. Everyone has their own traditions that they want to bring to this family get-together or meal, which again produces stress. Fortunately, Ethan, there are a few things you can do to help make the holiday less stressful for yourself and your loved ones. Here are a few Love Doctor tips for relieving stress, diffusing conflict, and maintaining harmony at family gatherings. First, let other people help. The responsibility of preparing, serving, and cleaning up the holiday get-together and meals shouldn't fall to one person. It goes without saying that if you're a guest, you should help your host. And hosts sometimes forget to accept that help. So let your guests shoulder some of the responsibility for the holiday and consider having everyone bring a favorite dish to pass at the family get-together. That way, every family member is an essential part of the meal or party. And if someone doesn't like to cook or bake, have them bring flowers, a game to play, or even the plates and napkins. Second, try to respect differences. It's not always easy to make conversation with a family member who doesn't share your politics or worldview, but you can't change anyone's behavior or opinion at one get-together. So be a role model and show respect for everyone's opinion. Remember, you don't have to agree on everything. Just be sure to validate and acknowledge each other's thoughts and feelings. Also, keep your boundaries. Boundaries are okay in what you tell your family or friends at the holiday get-togethers. And remember, in return, set limits for what you ask others about. Don't take it personally when they don't want to share your concerns or issues with you. Next, allow some topics at your get-together to be taboo. Taboo topics are topics that you just can't talk about at family functions, and that's okay. If there's a topic that just creates too much conflict for you or other family members, try to stay clear of that topic. And the most common examples are politics and religion. Also, try to be inclusive at your family get-togethers. And this helps everyone. Everyone needs to feel special and important, so do your best to help other family members feel that way. Compliments and noticing others diffuses stress and conflict. So notice your mother-in-law's new dress, your brother's new haircut, or your cousin's new friend. Also, in order to be inclusive to everyone, try to be sensitive to generational needs. Kids need games and toys and other diversions. Older people need a quiet place to rest before and after the meal. Also, be sure to accommodate special dietary needs. Make vegetarians and those with special dietary needs feel included by providing a couple of alternative dishes. And don't feel insulted if they don't eat everything you've prepared. Also, at these events, remember to keep it light. Studies show that laughter and smiling changes people's moods. Tell a funny story or a joke, or print out a list of one-liners from the internet, cut it into strips, and have each dinner guest read his or hers out loud. But remember, don't use self-deprecating humor or make fun of others at the holiday get-together. And finally, don't serve alcohol without food. People tend to eat and drink too much at holiday time. So to avoid incidents with intoxicated family members, always serve alcohol with a meal or hors d'oeuvres. So thank you, Ethan, for your question. I hope you can take some of these tips and incorporate them into your family get-togethers. Enjoy, and happy holidays to you and your family, and as always, to your healthy relationships now and in the future. That's it for me this morning. Thank you for listening and spending your morning with me. This is Dr. Terry Orbach, host of the Love Doctor Talk Radio program. Until next week, I'm Dr. Terry, the Love Doctor, wishing you healthy relationships and much, much love.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of The Love Doctor with your host, Dr. Terry Orbach. If you'd like to learn more about Dr. Terry's work, visit her website at drterrythelovedoctor.com and plan to spend next Monday morning with The Love Doctor right here on the Voice America channel. We'll see you next week.